This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Jim Schweitzer and Beth Farrell. They are partners at McKenna, Long & Aldridge, LLP, here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, it seems like it's Groundhog Day, guys. It's over and over the same sort of scenario with regard to our budget situation and sequestration. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's been postponed, you know, twice, and now we're approaching another deadline. So, you know, I just, and you guys are my go-to folks when I need to talk government contracts and implications of sequestration and budget. So it's great to have you on the show today.
Good to be here, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Well, this will be fun or painful or sad or I don't know what to call it. You know, it's an epic story, right? But where are we today with the federal budget?
Well, Roger, what I would say is that we're facing, and some people call it a trifecta, some people call it a three-headed monster. But our federal budget today is beset by three somewhat related but distinct issues. The first has to do with the debt ceiling, which is really the amount of money that the federal government can finance to pay for the obligations that have been entered into by current and past Congresses and administrations. And the federal debt ceiling is now $16.4 trillion, and it was supposed to bump up against the debt ceiling earlier this month, but Congress passed a new law which suspended the debt ceiling until May 19th. So that the bumping up against the debt ceiling and the ability of the federal government to meet its financial obligations is the first of the trifecta. The second of the trifecta has to do with budget sequestration. And budget sequestration is the short version is that it's a process of mandatory across-the-board budget cuts that affect all non-exempt federal programs, projects, and activities that was put in place most recently by the Budget Control Act of 2011, and it's a mechanism to compel deficit reduction is what it really is. And sequestration was supposed to begin January 2nd of this year, but at the last minute, Congress passed a law which essentially kicked the can down the road and postponed the implementation of sequestration to March 1st of this year. So that's the second aspect of the trifecta. The third aspect of the trifecta has to do with appropriations for fiscal year 2013. And last year, Congress passed what's known as a continuing resolution, which essentially funds the government at the rate of obligation or expenditure of the preceding fiscal year. And so in essence, the situation is that the government's been funded through March 27th of 2013. And if Congress doesn't enact new appropriations by March 27th of 2013, essentially barely a month from now, why, what will happen is that we'll have another government shutdown. So it's a crisis of a slightly different flavor. And so those are the three dilemmas facing the federal government and our fiscal situation today.
Well, let me add a little bit on the continuing resolution. I mean, it's true that if we don't have an extension of the continuing resolution past March 27th, there's going to be a shutdown. But in addition to it, performance under a continuing resolution places fiscal constraints on government spending. Agencies can't spend more than they spent in the last fiscal year. So it has an impact on how agencies are planning. And if they had planned to spend more in fiscal year 13, they can't do it simply because we're proceeding under a continuing resolution.
So in that regard, what you're saying from a practical perspective, like if you had a contracting program and you were going to, it's an indefinite quantity contract, and you plan to expand it this year if you're agency X, you're operating on last year's budget. So you don't have that flexibility unless you move money around or something. Is that sort of fair to say? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think they even have the ability to move the money around because they are prohibited from spending more. And spending has to be done in the various appropriations accounts that they have. There might be some flexibility for reprogramming, but I don't think that they can buy a new aircraft carrier, find enough money for that. So there definitely are agencies that had planned to spend more in fiscal year 13, either because of an option exercise or there was a big quantity to buy. You finished in development and now it's time to buy the products.
Or a new task order.
Right. For whatever reason, not just an IDIQ contract, Roger. But in all those situations, they simply need more money, and they plan to have more money in fiscal year 13. It was already part of their five-year budget projection. And then they're told at the beginning of the year, well, as long as we're under a continuing resolution, you got to live within your numbers for the previous year.
Right.
So a new obligation involves either new appropriations or a rate of expenditure that would exceed the appropriations rate from the preceding fiscal year. And that's what's precluded when you're operating under a continuing resolution.
Okay. So first of all, you mentioned aircraft carriers. I couldn't resist thinking about the one they didn't send to the Persian Gulf.
That would be the Harry Truman.
Okay. So the buck did stop there, right?
Well, and in point of fact...
Come on, that's my best joke of the year right there, man.
The buck did stop there. But if you're one of our strategic planners that has been formulating our national security problem or national security strategy, a component of that is having two aircraft carriers stationed in the Persian Gulf at all times. So in that sense, A, our national security may have been compromised, and B, if you're a community like San Diego, which is where the Truman is home ported, the failure to send that carrier out to sea, and there are financial consequences that flow from that, which can impact a local community.
Right. So, don't some of the guy, the sailors or whatever, they plan their leases or wherever they're staying around the fact that they're going to be at sea for 6-8 months, so that the ramifications, like throwing a rock in a pond and just the waves,
there is
right?
A ripple effect, very much so.
Yeah.
Right. It affects ship-to-shore rotations. It affects the expenditure of operation and maintenance funds for the carrier. It affects training. There are myriad consequences.
Right. Yeah. And everybody looks at it from their own perspective. Government workers all look at the trifecta of fiscal problems, and a lot of them are saying, oh, my goodness, I'm going to be furloughed.
Right.
See, base communities that are going to be hard hit because with furloughs, people aren't going to have as much money to spend. Everything's impacted, the contractors, the government, the workers, and the communities.
Yeah. So, you're making me, depressed is the right word, but, it seems to me that, and haven't we been operating like under continuing, it seems like our continuing resolutions have become permanent.
Yes.
Right?
In fact, there have been continuing resolutions to one degree or another in fiscal years 2011 and 2012 before 2013. So continuing resolutions really are the failure of Congress to enact a regular appropriation bill for the forthcoming fiscal year. And it's the fact that we have operated under continuing resolutions to such an extent is really a testament to the dysfunction in Washington.
Right. So, and I guess just about that continuing resolution, does that mean, since we've had them for so long, are we continuing to fund at the level that went back in like 2000? Do you see my question? How are there adjustments at all, or is it like...
There can be. And so, for example, in fiscal year 2011, there was a series of continuing resolutions. I believe we had six short-term right. CRs in 2011.
I remember that, yeah.
And ultimately, the last CR in fiscal year 2011 was passed in April. And what it did was it funded the non-defense agencies at the rate for the preceding year, FY10, but it okay. enacted new appropriations for DOD for the remainder from April through October of fiscal year 2011. So the Defense Department actually got at least a partial year regular appropriation bill in that year.
Okay. And I just had another thought. I may ask this question maybe a little bit off, but
sure.
but I think it's related fiscally. So how does the drawdown in Afghanistan and Iraq, how does that play? Is that a separate pot of money or does that?
It is a separate pot of money. And I'll let Beth chime in here momentarily, but it's called Funding for Overseas Contingency Operations.
Okay.
The amount of money is $88 billion for FY12.
Okay.
Now, it's substantially less than that for FY13. It's authorized and appropriated separately by Congress
okay.
from the regular defense budget. Importantly, Funding for Overseas Contingency Operations is subject to sequestration. And
oh,
the
really?
Concern with that has been that that's the money that really ensures that our troops in the field, our servicemen and women, have what they need to fight the war where their lives are at stake.
Sure.
And even that
Absolutely.
Money stands to be cut if sequestration occurs.
Right. But one thing I did notice, Jim, in the guidance that a lot of the DOD and then the DOD components have issued is that they're trying their best right now to preserve what they can for overseas operations in Afghanistan
right.
in particular. And so for the advanced planning where they're saying, let's trim a little here, let's already start the saving, they're holding that in the reserve. They're hoping they don't
right.
have to go there and
sure.
sequester or trim further budget money from that very important activity.
Yeah, and then we have budgets here, so we do have to take a commercial break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more with Jim Schweitzer and Beth Farrell from McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP, and we'll continue our discussion of our fiscal issues, sequestration, government contracts, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Jim Schweitzer and Beth Farrell. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we have been talking and we'll continue to talk fiscal law, one of my favorite subjects. It's fiscal issues with the budget. What does it all mean? And ultimately, you know, from a listening audience perspective, what does it mean for government contractors? But let's do a little sort of, fiscal rules and regs 101 or law, whatever you want to call it, and start with the debt ceiling. What is the debt ceiling again a little bit, and why is it important?
The debt ceiling is really the maximum amount of money that the federal government may borrow and finance to meet the financial obligations that Congress and the administration, both past and present, have entered into. It is, in effect, the borrowing limit for the federal government.
I like to think of it as a credit card limit for the United States.
Okay. So when you bump up against that limit, you have to, you're done? You're like, you got to pay with cash? What's the deal?
Well, the real threat is that we would default on our obligations, which would affect the standing of the United States in the international community. It would affect our credit worthiness in international as well as national markets. And perhaps more importantly for government contractors, if we were to default and not be able to meet our financial obligations, the government's ability to pay government contractors would be jeopardized.
Right. So in what does the government do? I mean, I know I've read stories or heard about the idea like they can you know, it's in May, right, when the debt ceiling has
May
to be?
May 19th. I mean,
is that May 19th the hard date, or is that one of those things where they're going to do a bunch of, you know, gyrations with, you know, money somehow the way they do that could extend it beyond that, or what? Or,
well,
how do you like for that for a technical question?
I mean, it's really esoteric stuff, Roger. And the Secretary of the Treasury has said that he has at his disposal what he refers to as extraordinary measures. And I guess those relate to financing, and I mean, it really is esoteric stuff, and I can't claim to be an expert in what those extraordinary measures are, but they have the potential to defer the actual date on which we would default.
But not by a significant amount.
And again,
when they talk about it, the date for the debt ceiling being reached, it's an approximation because they take into account how much money's coming into the Treasury. If everybody does their part and pays their taxes early this year, that might help. And it takes into account all the obligations going out. So, you know, the debt ceiling is just that, the debt ceiling. And so it is affected by money in and money out. So right now they estimate that May 19th is going to be the date that we're going to bump up against the ceiling again. And if we bump up against the ceiling,
right,
and we cannot borrow more money, we're not going to have enough money to pay outstanding obligations. And that's what's going to lead us to the potential default situation, because a lot of the outstanding obligations are paying the people who've invested in the United States, bought bonds, treasury notes, things like that. We got to pay them interest. We're not going to be able to pay them on time. We're going to be in default. There's not going to be, and another consequence is there's just not going to be enough money to pay all the obligations. So what do you
do? Including government contractors.
Including government contractors.
You prioritize, right?
You got to prioritize. And, you know, just as a practical matter for government contractors, it means that payments may be delayed or deferred. You may get paid on a pro rata basis. You just can't be assured of getting that cash in, you know, the stream of revenue in, even though you've done the work.
Right.
And, you know, one consolation is you probably, in most circumstances, would be entitled to prompt payment act interest. But, you know, a lot of companies can't float for the United States. I mean, they're counting on that revenue coming in.
Particularly small companies.
Right, that's what I was going to mention. Right. This will have a huge impact on small businesses.
Yes,
right?
It does.
Their contract with the federal government. Right, and then you have the ripple effect that we talked about earlier. If this happens, what it means for all those for folks who support government contractors or do other business with government contractors.
Right, or subcontractors who have clauses in, with their prime contractors that say pay when paid.
Right, that's a great topic. Like, so that relationship between the prime and sub in this sort of uncertain time, you know, what do you talk, when you talk to your clients or, you know, I don't give any trade secrets away, but when you guys are talking to people,
it's not a trade secret.
What are you telling them to be ready for or to at least think about with regard to those subcontract relationships?
Well, Jim and I have been dealing with this continuing resolution issue for years now. And every time we come to the brink and we think we're going to have a shutdown, everybody wants to know what's happening. We've dealt with the failure to raise the debt ceiling and bumping up against that and what the implications are going to be. And, you know, one of the things we tell people is look at your contracts. If you are a subcontractor, look at your subcontract. If you're a prime contractor, look at your subcontracts with your lower tier guys and figure out some basic things like funding. You know, is everything completely funded at the federal level?
Is it an incrementally funded contract?
Right. And then you look at your relationship with your subcontractor. Are you obligated to pay them even if you have not been paid by the federal government? Or can you tell them they're going to have to wait? These things are all done based upon individual subcontracts.
And, you know, what's the funding status of your contract? There are contract fund status reports that tell you the amount of appropriations that have been obligated to the contract.
Sure.
And so it's very important to have situational awareness of that. Another important aspect is for companies to talk to the contracting officer. You know, what's going to happen with my contract? What's your understanding, contracting officer? Do you intend to issue me a stop work order because you aren't going to have funds? And That's important for contractors because they can recover costs associated with a stop work order, but they need to segregate those costs in anticipation of filing a claim or a request for equitable adjustment.
Right, and that is the primary impact that I think we're going to see with sequestration is with the percentage decrease that they're now predicting. I think DOD says
46 billion.
Yeah, but and then they go, if we look at a percentage reduction that'll have to be implemented for the remaining 7 months of the fiscal year, we're talking a 13% approximate deduct, which is a big hit. And so
that's 13% because they have less time to make.
That's right. Because right. So when someone tells you that sequestration is going to require a certain percentage deduct for the fiscal year, that's true. But now that we're midway through the fiscal year, they're going to have to play catch up with the reductions, and as a result, the government is going to have to find ways to trim budget, and it's going to include procurement contracts. And it's going to have a big impact on contractors.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's really great to hear you when I asked you that question about subcontracts. It's like go back and read your contract, right? That is just such great advice, and you rarely hear it, but that you got to go back and look at that, and that's the fundamental basis of your relationship. And that's going to be the rules of the road. And I think there's no better advice than that. You got to understand how your contract works, what the terms and conditions are. And then be able to apply that to your situation, right?
Right. I think that's always good advice, Roger. And what's happened in the past is that there has been money. We've had nice budgets for procurements. We haven't had this era of fiscal austerity. We haven't had sequestration. We haven't had the thought that the federal government will not be in a position to pay its obligations when due, will not be able to have enough money to put additional funding on contracts. And so people have taken for granted that the money's there, and they take for granted that their contractual relationships with the federal government and also the relationships between the prime and the subcontractor make it all work. And now you need to go back and start look at your contracts and go, what if any of these three things happen, or heaven forbid all three things happen, how will my contracts say who gets to do what?
Sure. And, right now we do have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Jim Schweider and Beth Farrell. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we'll be talking more sequestration, budget issues, and what it all means. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Beth Farrell and Jim Schweiter. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we are talking budget, one of our favorite topics. And, when we took a break, we started talking a little bit about sequestration and what it meant. And it's striking to me that the point that we're really not talking, for the rest of the year about a 9.8% cut in terms of what's left. It's a higher percentage to get to that 9 because we've delayed it so long, right? So, and I guess it kicks in March 1st. Right. Can you guys walk a little bit through with the mechanics of it and what it is and what it means across the board?
Well, the mechanics of it really are that the amount of sequestration is $1.2 trillion over a course of 10 years. It works out to $109 billion a year through fiscal year 2021, equally divided between defense and non-defense accounts. So that really works out to be about $54.7 billion. But and so that would be the annual cut in 2013. It would be across the board for defense and non-defense accounts that are not exempt. Now, the bill that passed at the beginning of this year to delay sequestration for 2 months essentially reduced the amount of the sequestration by a total of $24 billion for fiscal year 2013, equally divided between defense and non-defense, so that the actual cut for defense and non-defense is $46 billion for the remainder of this fiscal year. So mechanically, that's sort of the short version of how it works, Roger.
Okay, and so I'm just that $12 billion, I guess that was part of a deal. That's just part of a deal. We're going to put some money back in certain things to get the deal done?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, so, you know, what is where are we? I mean, I know that it's a moving target, you know, and things can change pretty quickly, but, you know, I guess there hasn't been a lot going on right now.
I think the last time Congress was able to do anything was the Sequestration Transparency Act, where they thought that...
Remember that, Roger?
Right. Remember at the end of the summer, and there was supposed to be this big report where OMB was going to come in and detail account by account.
Well, it did detail account by account, but not project, program, and activity.
Right. Some people wanted transparency on how OMB was going to implement sequestration, because by law, that's who implements it. And they wanted details. They said, everybody hears there are going to be these great cuts, big cuts, and everybody wants to know, am I going to be affected? So they wanted a level of detail. The Transparency Act was supposed to do exactly that. And what we got was a 450-page list of accounts that would have an account name, an account number, and then it would have whatever the percentage was. So it was done at a very high level, and it didn't tell you anything.
Sure.
And
I remember that.
Yeah. But that's the last time everybody was able to agree in Congress on anything.
So actually, what we're getting right now is sort of like the follow on piece by piece, like,
well,
you know, 800,000 people are going to be furloughed, all that kind of. I mean, so they're filling in the details, though, now.
Not many details.
Each of the services, the Army, Navy, Air Force, have issued some guidance that essentially talk about how they want to try and prioritize overseas contingency accounts. The accounts that are going to be hit the hardest are the one-year appropriation accounts, the operations and maintenance, military personnel. Well, military personnel has been exempted from sequestration.
Right, but things like training. Anything in the maintenance area.
Flying hours,
modernization,
steam days, tank miles.
Yes, all of those things. If you look at, there was DOD guidance that was issued in mid-January, followed by
OMB guidance.
And then after that, we got guidance from the various service components.
That's right.
And they didn't do it voluntarily. They were directed by DOD to do it. So they end up with a list of things where they think they can start the cuts. And they're the predictable things: operations and maintenance. Defer it as much as possible. Depot maintenance, stockpiling, things like this that you would regularly do for third quarter and fourth quarter, not going to do it. So they've tried to pick what they consider to be the low-hanging fruit to start on to save in the budget. And then they'll move on to other things. Although the Navy, I noticed, announced that there were several ships that they're going to have to postpone, some programs that are going to be postponed, and some buys. They had an LPD and a CVN.
Right.
And
then
a couple of other ships they had planned for fiscal year 2013, but they're going to have to defer.
That's exactly right. And to your point, there has been some marginal activity in Congress, Roger. On the House side, Congressman Buck McKeon, who's chairman of the Armed Services Committee, introduced a bill. And on the Senate side, it was Senator Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire. And she had, you know, several there are co-sponsors on both sides. But the net effect of that would be to avoid the sequestration entirely in 2013. But that would be accomplished by essentially attrition in the federal workforce, and as well by denying pay increases to members of Congress. Those are the two.
Okay, so they're sort of like what they do, a hiring freeze or something, and have when people left over time.
Kind of right, thing. Right, right, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
Hey, can you talk a little bit about, because I think it might be good, helpful, what it means to be a project, the project, program, and activity in terms of the way sequestration cuts, because it seems to me that's one of the big, it's a challenge that, that as I understand it, that you know, like DOD has, that it's so, prescribed in sort of the across-the-board cuts there that they don't have any real flexibility to move money. I know they, you know, what is it, where they can transfer funds up to $5 billion.
Reprogram,
that's the word I'm looking for. They could reprogram funds up to $5 billion, but the way the sequestration law is written, it goes down to the project, program, and activity, and that kind of limits the ability to manage it. It makes it harder anyway, right?
It makes it harder, particularly for small projects, programs, and activities. And so let me try and give you a compare and contrast here. So
sure.
The OMB report that was required by the Sequestration Transparency Act provided what the cuts would be at the account level. So, for example, the cut would be 9% to aircraft procurement Air Force.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. what that really doesn't tell you is, I mean, aircraft procurement Air Force is the money for the Air Force to buy C-130s and the Joint Strike Fighter and
so it's F-16. A big number.
So it's a big number and doesn't really give you a level of fidelity about what that would mean at the
sure.
program,
mm-hmm.
project, and activity level. Now, within the Department of Defense, and I'm more familiar with that agency, you have big programs and little programs, and the size of the program, project, and activity level really drives, to some extent, the flexibility that the government may have. And what I mean by that is, if the program is for the Navy to buy the next generation aircraft carrier, that is a big multi-billion dollar program with many contracts, subordinate contracts that comprise that program.
Sure.
So in a situation like that, the government's going to have more flexibility in moving money around. They just have to hit an aggregated number
sure.
for that program. But if it's a much smaller program to define or much more constrained, then that program is more likely to be hit hard because there's not going to be the same amount of flexibility.
Right. They have less room to maneuver to try to manage to the number that they have to meet.
That's well, what's interesting, though, is that there is no standard definition of what a project, a program, and our activity is. And so there is some thought that OMB might have a little more flexibility when it issues
its
guidance and sequestration orders on how it needs to be implemented.
And that's actually an important point, Beth, because the governing regulation and is OMB Circular A11. And under OMB Circular A11, OMB will provide guidance to the federal executive branch agencies about how they implement sequestration. And we really haven't yet seen
that,
definitized guidance.
All right. Well, right now we do have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to my guests, Beth Farrell and Jim Schweitzer. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we'll continue our discussion of sequestration and what it means for contractors. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Beth Farrell and Jim Schweitzer. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we're talking sequestration and budget and all that fun stuff. And, you know, Beth, one question I want to ask you is, you know, we talked in the previous segment about the fact that, you know, now it's sort of really like a 13% cut of what's left, you know, doing the math, because it's really a 9.8 or whatever percent cut for an entire fiscal year. Is there any kind of rules of the road or requirements with regard to how those, you know, reductions need to be made? You know, do they have to be done in equal installments? You know, we've talked about, you know, moving money or just decisions with regard to contracts and how there might be some room to maneuver if you have a big enough program. But is there any maneuverability with regard to the timing for the cuts?
Well, the statute doesn't require that sequestration be implemented in equal installments throughout a fiscal year or the part of the fiscal year where sequestration is in effect. So there is some flexibility, and the question remains whether OMB will issue guidance that says that as a matter of good governance, I'm directing everybody to sequester in equal installments. Otherwise, you may have agencies who say, I'm going to wait and hold back the sequester until the very end in the hopes that Congress is able to reach some kind of accommodation. But Jim always points out to me how terribly risky that would be for an agency.
Right. Think about it. If the cut that we're now taking over 7 months had to be taken over the last month of the fiscal year, it would be a much higher percentage of the overall budget that would.
Right. Right.
And so it could literally force the shutdown of an agency for a period.
Right. Well, I guess that would be okay if it was August in Washington, D.C., right? Everybody go on vacation.
Right. Declare it vacation month. Right.
But then again, they wouldn't have any money to, right?
That's right.
To go on vacation.
That's
so,
right.
So with regard to. I think there's two sort of general questions to talk. And I guess we've touched a little bit on the fact there might, furloughs play into this. So there would be a significant potential impact on especially agencies that have a lot of federal employees and fewer contracts because they'll have to deal with their employees. And that's going to have a huge impact, especially in this area and, people's morale and that thing. How would it also affect sort of the government contractor world? What are sort of the tools in the toolbox that the government may use in its, contract relationship with, companies and trying to, address the numbers that they have to reach?
Well, the government is going to have to figure out how to accomplish its objectives with less money. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. And for existing contracts, they may decide that they will terminate them in whole or in part. They may decide that they will buy fewer whatever they were buying. They may decide to stop the contract for a period of time until funding gets caught up.
So you have a production break.
Right.
Or they could stretch the period of performance.
Right. One of the other things that we're seeing is the government coming into contractors and asking the contractor voluntarily to reduce the price of items. There was a case that I reported on at a seminar just this week, and it was very interesting.
Oh, was that the government contracts year in review?
Yes, it was. Okay. Yes, it was. So the performance disputes. And one of the cases I reported on was one, and it's not terribly significant generally, but the government said, gee, I've got this big contract with you. I'm ready to give you a task order. We have an agreed upon price in the big contract, but I'm not going to give you this task order unless you agree to a lower price. And it's a take it or leave it thing. I'm not going to place orders. The guy took the order at the lower price, but then he said it was a breach of the government's duty of good faith and fair dealing. And the board said no. The board said you were free to take it or leave it.
Right.
They couldn't force it upon you, but once you agree to it, you agree to it. And, it's a good reminder that there are limits on the government's unilateral authority to make changes of this type to the contract effort. But they can put you in the position where they go, look, you're either going to have to help me restructure the contract or the program in a way that we're going to save money, or it's going by the wayside. It's going to be on the chopping block. I don't think the boards are going to think that that's economic duress as described in the law. They're going to say it's a tough situation for everybody, and you're free to reject it.
Right. The other thing is, and I think, one of the things is definitely people are seeing in terms of this, the focus on cost is leading to, I think, to more low price, technically acceptable evaluation approaches.
Best value contracts.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Which I don't... I think that's you're being a penny wise, pound foolish in the long run.
Right.
Just because I think best value is a great tool for the government to get more efficiencies.
We're seeing also a dramatic shift once again to more firm fixed price contracts
in circumstances that previously would have been cost reimbursement contracts.
Right. Right. Just trying to manage the contracts still have the uncertainty that would necessitate or under the FAR. Talk about doing cost reimbursement to acknowledging that uncertainty, but they're trying to create certainty with the budget, right?
Well, but they're putting the risk on the contractor.
Yeah, yeah, it's an allocation of risk issue, and they're
it absolutely is. And contractors have to be go into those kinds of arrangements with eyes wide open and not expect the government to come in and try to make them whole if there has, if they have misjudged the uncertainties.
Yeah, especially in this environment, you're not going to be able, if it's a fixed price deal, you've got to really do your homework, because you're not going to get that, you've changed my performance requirements or something to be able to get more, to adjust the contract price. So, it's always interesting. So what are people saying about sequestration? What are, the government officials saying about sequestration?
Nobody has anything good to say about it.
From anybody's perspective, right? Doesn't matter who you are,
right? It doesn't matter who you are.
I mean, everyone agrees that it's a draconian process. Secretary Panetta has said it would inflict severe damage to our national security. One official, Brett Lambert, who's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial Policy, said, and this is a quote, "I think about sequestration more as fiscal castration. It will emasculate the industrial base."
Wow.
But my favorite quote is actually from former Secretary of Defense Bob Gates. This is a quote from a speech he gave last September. Quote, "The inability of so many political leaders today to step outside their ideological cocoons or offend their most partisan supporters has become a real threat to America's future. I hope that following the presidential election, whatever adults remain in the two political parties will make the compromises necessary to put this country back in order." Pretty strong words from a Secretary of Defense. And of course, that was a pre-election statement. And since the election, unfortunately, I think it's fair to say we've seen a lot of political posturing and not a lot of real negotiating.
Right. And Gates served in both Republican and
Democratic administrations. He's a bipartisan guy.
Yeah. And that's what, we got to figure out some solution to these problems. So just on the mechanics issue, which accounts, are there specific agencies or whatever that are exempt from sequestration?
Yes, there are. And it's the exemptions are specified both in the Balanced Budget and Emergency Deficit Control Act of 1985, which most people refer to as the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act, as well as the Budget Control Act of 2011. And the main exempt accounts are Social Security, Medicaid. Medicare is limited to a 2% cut. All Veteran Affairs, Department of Veteran Affairs programs are exempt. And the military personnel accounts, pay and benefits for service members, have been exempted by President Obama. That was an affirmative determination that he had to make. So those are the main exempt accounts. But most of them, importantly, from a deficit and debt standpoint, most of the exempt accounts are entitlement programs. And so what that really means is that sequestration, cuts occur predominantly on the discretionary spending
side.
Right,
and that's where that's where government contracts are.
That is exactly right.
But, we've got about a couple minutes left. Can you just sort of sum up, if I'm a contractor, what do I need to do to prepare for, or continue to be prepared for in this sort of Groundhog Day world we live in, where it keeps happening over and over?
It's the deja vu of problems. We tell everybody to start out with their contracts. Take a look at it. Make sure you understand what funding you have. Make sure you understand your payment status, because if we have a debt ceiling problem and payments aren't made, you want to try to make sure you get paid before that happens. Communicate with the contracting officer. Try to figure out what kind of priority there is for your program. If there's already talk that it is a lesser priority and will be affected by reduced buys or terminations in whole or in part, communicate with your subcontractors and try to get everybody on board and think about whether some procurement advocacy is warranted to try to make sure that people realize how important your program is or what you provide to the government, whether it be services or products. Those are some of the things that we're encouraging people to do.
Right. Great, great advice, Beth. And I want to thank my guests today, Jim Schweitzer and Beth Farrell. They are partners at McKenna Long & Aldridge LLP here in Washington, D.C. And you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.